will be reading from John 8:39 through 47. They answered him, "Abraham is our father." But Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing what Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing what your father did." But they said to him, "We were not born of sexual immorality. We have but one father, even God." Then Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God, and I am here. I come not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, and has nothing to do with the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God." Thank you.
So, I prepared a whole sermon for you here, but God taught me something this week, and so I'm going to give you kind of an extra today, because all this week, I worked hard on this sermon, and lots of things came up, and it was a difficult week in some ways, and yesterday, I'm pushing, saying, I gotta finish this, gotta put the finishing touches on it, and I heard God saying to me, in a very small voice, "Hey, just hang out with me, spend time with me," and it's like, no, I've got too much to do, I gotta finish this, right? Everybody's gonna be here, and they're gonna listen, and it's like, I gotta finish this. And God just keep putting obstacles in my way until I finally came to the point where it's like, okay, fine. And it was one of the hardest things I've done. And I stopped and I said, okay, not going to do any more sermon. Just going to go spend time with God. And I did. And it was a wonderful time. And God reminded me that we can work and work and work and hard for him. But if he's not in it, it's not worth anything. And spend some time with God, you know. He wants to spend time with you. He loves you, and he cherishes the time you guys spend together. So now to the sermon. Is truth important? We as Christians, I think, would obviously answer, yes, it is important. But does everybody in society value truth? I think not. Now, I don't have all the answers, and I don't preach regularly, so I really like audience participation. So I'm going to ask you questions, and times I'm going to have you think and even respond. So there's no test at the end, so it's not obligatory. But I would like to make this a little more of a mutual learning and understanding together. This week, I will ask a question, which you see up there. Is truth important? So first, we're going to watch a video, and this video was done by the Family Policy Institute of Washington, where a man did kind of a man-on-the-street interviews. He went to the University of Washington and started asking the students questions. Now, he was asking questions about gender identity, but I want you, as you listen to this video and watch this video, I want you to think about how these students process and rationalize untruths, okay? Think about not only what they're willing to say, but what they're not willing to say. And I also want you to think about what's going on in their minds, what beliefs they have to have in order to give the answers that they give. So we're going to watch the video now, and then I'll be back. All right, so what do you guys think of that? Kind of an interesting look into the minds of the youth today, and a rather terrifying look, if you really think about it, into the minds of youth today. I want to point out a few things that stood out to me in this. One is that the girl with the curly hair When he tells her an untruth, she says, good for you, be who you are. When that's exactly what he's not being. He's actually being who he isn't. And yet she says, be who you are. It's interesting. The blonde girl says the interviewer cannot be 6'5" because he's not. And yet he can be Chinese even though he's not. And she also, if you noticed, began to laugh at one point because she realized how silly what she was standing for really was. How silly it was to say, oh yeah, you're a Chinese woman, oh, but you can't be 6'5". And she actually kind of came to that point somewhere in her mind that was really, there's something wrong with her belief. But if you notice, she didn't back down. She didn't come back and say, yeah, you're right, that's silly. She actually didn't change her answer. And then how about the guy with the hat on backwards? And he sounds very intellectual. Yes, if you can give me 3-point thesis on why you're a Chinese woman, then I would be willing to say you are. Really? Okay, now what's this? It's a pen. Now, what if I said, if you can give me a good reason this is a banana, I'd be happy to believe it. Wouldn't that be silly? I mean, he sounds so intellectual and he sounds so open-minded and like, yeah, he's really thinking. But isn't he just being silly? So, what do you think the students in this video value more than truth?
Pure acceptance.
Pure acceptance. Very good. Diane? Yeah, like not wanting to hurt others' feelings, right?
I think they value the identity of the other person, letting them create their own identity as opposed to telling them.
Okay, so their value is to let you create your own identity or your own reality in some ways, right? Anything else? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're open-minded to the point where... Oh, and they want everybody to feel accepted. Very good. Yeah. How about wanting to be non-judgmental and non-confrontational?
I think they're afraid.
Oh, really? Yeah, afraid?
Yeah, because I can see mm-hmm. Pressure.
Some of them, I think you're actually right. I think some of them, but others, I think have bought into it so much, I don't even think it would occur to them to actually correct them and say, yeah, no, you're wrong. It's just not in their worldview to actually think that way. So what ideas are underlying the values that these students have? This may be a little more difficult question, but what kind of worldview, what ideas about reality are underlying these students' concepts that allow them to give these answers? Love thy neighbor? Okay. Okay, we'll go with that one. Anything else?
Kind of like the gospel of religion where you choose to, love people regardless of what they do, even if it's wrong. And,
okay.
You know, a lot of churches are leaning that way these days. Mm-hmm. Just accept whatever you do, even if it's wrong.
Right, so... So their worldview is that I can't tell you you're wrong. I just have to accept anything you do, and anything you do is fine as long as you have a reason for it, as long as you've rationalized it in your own mind. That's good. Okay, so reality is subjective, or let's say truth is subjective, because we're talking about truths and untruths. So what does that mean, truth is subjective? It really means that truth is whatever you say it is. So if I say it's a banana, that's my truth. All right? Pen is a banana. And don't step on my truths or else I'm going to get angry. Okay? We're going to get to that later. Don't worry. What was that? Okay. So, go ahead.
There's a lot of, as long as you're not hurting anybody, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. As long as you don't hurt anybody else, you can do whatever you want. So does that kind of fit biblical principles that you can harm yourself and there's no problem with that? I don't think so. But we'll dive into that a little more. So when we say that truth is subjective, okay, what we're really saying is that truth doesn't exist. Because if anybody can define truth to be whatever they want, truth suddenly has no meaning. And here's an example that I have. In the Bible, God defines marriage as between a man, as a covenant between a man and a woman. Well, now we said, okay, well, let's add man and a man. And let's add woman and a woman. And then I even heard about a woman in Germany who married her dog. And then I also heard about a woman in New York who had a whole wedding, sent out invitations, hired the venue, brought everybody in, and married herself. At some point, yeah, some of you think that's a good idea. So, no man to mess up the house, right? But at some point, the definition of marriage becomes meaningless. Marriage becomes meaningless. And in the same way, if you bring your own ideas to truth, truth becomes meaningless. Truth has no inherent meaning any longer. I think the other self-deception that they have, and maybe some of you mentioned this, but I want to go into this a little more. I think the other lie is that if people, the people who live in self-deception would be happy and well-adjusted if everybody just affirmed what they believed. So if you are a guy and you think you're a girl, you'd be perfectly happy and well-adjusted if everybody just goes along with your deception. And they really believe that. But how far does that go? So I have a story that goes way, way, way back. In fact, probably goes back to the 80s. I was listening to James Dobson on Focus on the Family. And James Dobson was a professional psychologist. And he was doing an internship in a mental facility. And one of the patients actually believed he was dead. And James Dobson said, well, I am going to convince him that he's not dead. So he went to him one day and he said, okay, do dead people bleed? And the guy said, no, dead people don't bleed. So he took out a needle, pricked the guy's finger, drew out some blood, said, there you go. And the guy looked down and he said, well, look at that. Dead people do bleed. So how far does it go in affirming other people's self-deceptions? Ooh, not using the mic. There's a story, and this is actually, I think, a tragic story about a woman in North Carolina who believed she should have been born blind. And she went to a psychologist who happened to be a university professor, and she counseled with him. Now, did he try to help her to become a normal person, to accept the fact that she could see? No. He actually dripped lye into her eyes and permanently blinded her. I know. It's tragic. But that's taking this philosophy to its ultimate extreme. Now, did he really help that woman? No. What would have been helpful is to take her out of her self-deception, to bring truth into her life. But instead, what he did was he said, well, and he went back to this philosophy, this person is a perfectly well-adjusted, happy, healthy person if only everybody around her just reaffirms her self-delusions. And so that's what he did. He made her self-delusion come true. So, why is it so hard for these students that we saw to actually stand up for truth? It's a good question. Let's see what truth is, how we define truth. I went to dictionary.com, and as I was actually doing this sermon, I realized that I was actually too lazy to actually get up and go to the bookshelf and open a dictionary. So I just looked it up on dictionary.com. And dictionary.com gives this definition. Conformity, truth is conformity with fact or reality or verity. Well, I'd say that's a good definition. That's the official definition in an official dictionary. And I'd say it pretty much conforms to what most of us would believe. But then I thought, well, let's get a little different opinion. Let's get a different view. And I went to the Urban Dictionary. Now, Pastor Bobby also did that in some of his sermons, got definitions from the Urban Dictionary. But I don't know if all of you know what the Urban Dictionary is. It's actually just a website where people go and they just give their own definitions. So people just write any definition they want, and then other people come and they vote. They vote on the definitions they like, and the definitions you like float to the top, and the definitions people don't like go to the bottom. So it's really more, it's not really what I'd call a good definition. But what it is, it kind of gives us a kind of an idea of what people in society are thinking. Kind of gives us a pulse on what our current culture thinks about a certain topic. So that's why I went there, because I want to see what our current culture thinks about truth. So the first definition that comes up is something which would probably upset a great many people if it were known and made public. So, yeah, that's pretty good. So that kind of implies that truth is not something that a great many people know, does it? I did skip a couple, so these are like from the top five, say, because a couple of them weren't appropriate for church and one wasn't really appropriate to the sermon. But the second one I came up with was that which would make most mainstream newspapers go out of business in a matter of days. Which also implies that truth is not really out in the public, that truth is not widely known, and that people don't really see truth very often. Now, this third one's kind of interesting. Myth, the truth will set you free. Fact, the truth will get the living hell beat out of you. Oh, you know what? I actually put heck in there, and then we actually copied it from the Urban Dictionary again. Sorry about that. We get the living heck beat out of you, or perhaps worse, killed. Wow. That's a pretty strong statement, actually. The truth could get you killed. Think about that for a moment. What this really implies is that people think truth is unpopular, is not widely known, and would cause a very bad reaction when you speak it.
That's true.
You think so? Yeah. You think that's true?
Look at the apostles. They spoke the truth, and they were persecuted.
Ah, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so speaking the truth, and you actually jumped ahead in my sermon, so you knew exactly where I was going, because we're going to get there too. So now that we've seen what society says about the truth, what our culture says about the truth, let's look at what the Bible says about the truth. So the first thing we know is that truth is number 9, of the Ten Commandments. So if we go to Exodus, there we go. Thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor, which is just a fancy way of saying, tell the truth. Even, and it kind of implies that you're going to gain something by lying about your neighbor, right? Maybe you wanted his goat, or I don't know. Maybe you borrowed his tools and you wanted to keep them. But it's saying that don't lie, even if it might benefit you. Okay? So that's the Old Testament. Now, I kind of like fun facts. And if you don't, bear with me. Try to stay awake. This will be short and sweet. I wanted to see what the New Testament and what particularly what Jesus and the Gospel says about truth. So I did a word search. And I found something that kind of surprised me a little bit. And in the English Standard Version, which is the version that's in the pews that we have here, If you do a word search on the word truth, you will come up with Matthew having exactly one instance of truth. Mark will have one instance of the word truth. Luke will have one instance of the word truth. And John has 23 instances of the word truth. And that's why we read from John, or William read from John earlier today, because John is kind of like the superpower of truth, the Gospel of John. Truth is very important to John. And when we go to John, we can get a lot of what is said about truth. Now, of those 23 references to truth in the Gospel of John, 21 either describe Jesus or are spoken by Jesus. So Jesus had a lot to say about truth in the Gospel of John. So let's take a look. Let's see. Let me find where I am in my notes. So let's take a look at John 8:40. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. See, now Diane was right. The truth can get you killed. And so is that one definition in the Urban Dictionary. The truth can get you killed. Jesus is the prime example of the truth actually creating such a strong reaction that he died for the truth. Let's go to John 8:32. Jesus says, "And you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Now, while the previous verse actually went along with the Urban Dictionary, where it says the truth will get you killed, this one actually directly contradicts the Urban Dictionary, which says that the truth will set you free is a myth. Jesus said this, the truth will set you free. Now, we know that the truth of Jesus's death for our sin sets us free. We know that the truth that Jesus came, was born, grew up, lived the perfect life, and then took our guilt on him when he died on the cross so that we could take his perfect life on us and be freed from our guilt and our sin. We know that truth sets us free. And that's probably the primary truth that Jesus came to tell us to set us free. But can other truths set us free too? I think so. I think that actually some of those students in the video, if they stood for truth, I think they would be freed. And people who definitely live in under some delusions about their own identity would be set free if they knew the truth. So let's see. I've kind of lost where I am in my notes here. I'm kind of freestyling here. So now let's go to John 14:6. Jesus said to him, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Now, there's several startling things about this. It's really saying Jesus is the only way. But in this, Jesus actually defines himself as truth. He usually uses the term truth to define his nature and his character. Okay? Let's go to John 15:26. Jesus said, "But when the Helper comes, whom I will send you from the Father, the Spirit of truth, who proceeds from the Father, he will bear witness about me." So not only does Jesus define himself with the word truth, he defines the Holy Spirit with the word truth. Now that's two parts of the Trinity, so we can actually extrapolate and say God defines himself partly by the word truth. So truth is important. So when a Christian answers that question, is truth important, a Christian has to say yes, because Jesus is the author and finisher of our faith. He's the person our religion is named after, because Jesus is the Christ, and we are Christians. So Christians do value truth, and they should value truth. And that's one reason why when we see a video like we just saw, it's almost jarring, because we see how far society has drifted from the truth, and we see that our youth have no anchor to truth at all. What does that mean for society? What does that mean for us? Those are good questions, which I'm not going to answer right now. You can think about that. So I'm going to go one more verse here. John 18:37. Jesus said, "For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Truth is the purpose Jesus came. When we treat truth cavalierly, we're directly contradicting the reason Jesus came to die for us. So we can see from this set of scriptures that God defines himself as truth. Jesus spoke the truth at the risk of his life, and he knew it. That Jesus was sent to bring truth. So, can we say that Jesus valued truth? Is that pretty safe? So what does that mean for us? As Christians, even though we are saved by grace and our sins are forgiven, we live in a fallen world which is subject, and we're subject to our sin nature. So next I'm going to tell you go to the next slide. It turns out that some people did a survey, and this is what they found. A new study of Christians' views of political issues found that conservative and liberal Christians alike believe their views on abortion and same-sex marriage would differ from Jesus' views of the same issues if he were on earth today, the Christian Post reports. Let that sink in for a little bit. Now, this survey didn't say the exact percentages, but it implies that it's a majority of people who self-identify as Christians say that their views on these two issues, and probably others, but they pointed out these two issues, would probably differ from the way Jesus believed. Does that shock you too? I kind of didn't shock me, but it saddens me. Because if Jesus is the truth, and you believe something different, what are you believing? It's an untruth, right? You're not believing the truth. So what do they think? Do you think these people think Jesus was mistaken?
Well, John 3:19 says that light has come into the world, but men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil.
That's good. Men love evil rather than darkness because their deeds are evil. And darkness. So even Christians sometimes fall for that. So why did these people think Jesus was wrong on these issues? Is it maybe for the same reasons that those students in the video are willing to acknowledge untruths? In order to not appear judgmental or not appear confrontational. Maybe it's just easier to go with the flow than to stand for truth. I don't know. I don't have the answer for that. It's probably a mixture of a lot of things. Every person probably has their own reasons for believing untruths or by saying they're a Christian, but they don't really believe in Jesus' views on certain things. I don't know. It's convenient, yes. Yes, it's convenient. It doesn't make you a target. Maybe it is fear of, well, like the Urban Dictionary said, maybe it's the fear that truth will have a backlash and you might suffer for it, like Jesus did.
Maybe it's self-interest.
Self-interest? Yeah, you know, that's true too, because what's easier to say, oh, good for you, and walk away, or to say, hey, you know, you need help. Maybe I could help you, or maybe I should help you. It's just so much easier to let people go their own way and not to confront them and not to help them. So in what ways might Christians sometimes behave like students in the video? There you go. We sometimes bow to peer pressure.
We and see a lot of churches changing from being they want to be more of a seeker friendly church.
Mm-hmm.
And then not discuss those things.
Okay.
Heaven and hell that they don't really exist.
So a church might want to blend in a little bit so the people who come in aren't turned off, maybe. So you kind of start compromising on the truth here and there. Yeah, that could happen.
Janet.
Oh, Janet.
Okay, so it ties into this study. I think that our culture is changing in that they believe in the evolution of culture and ideas.
Yes. Okay, very good. So she said that people believe that truth evolves and changes with culture and with different norms and with different ideas. And in fact, that kind of brings something to my mind where the world, since they don't believe in truth, they don't believe that the things we hold as true are actually true. They think we just made them up. Right? I mean, if you don't believe in truth, we think we have found truth. We come to Christianity and we say, we found Jesus, we found truth. And this truth is worth holding on to, and this truth is going to set me free, and this truth is going to change my life. But the world doesn't believe in truth. So they say, well, you know, if your beliefs are inconvenient to me, just change them. Just change it. You made it up in the first place. Just change it to accommodate the culture, to accommodate the world, to accommodate other people. But Christians don't see it that way, and because Jesus took truth very seriously. Okay, I've gone far afield from my notes here, so so I got to come back to what I'm doing here. I'm going to go to my last scripture. Oh, good. 2 Timothy 3:16. All scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness. Now, the words reproof, correction, and righteousness probably aren't even in the vocabulary of these students you saw on the video. Correction? Well, what does that mean? They weren't even willing to correct him on his age or his height. Reproof, that would cause dissension. That would cause me to be judgmental. Righteousness, what is that? Righteousness implies a standard of truth. But this is our standard, that all truth, I kind of in my mind put truth in there. All truth is breathed out by God, because God is truth, and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness. And I think that's the standard God calls us to. And if we aren't correcting each other when we fall into error, then how are we different from the world? And yeah, sometimes it's difficult, sometimes it's awkward. But and I'm not saying to be to start being a critic, you know, going around, hey, you're ugly, yeah, you're fat, you know, I'm not saying that at all. We always speak the truth in love because Jesus did teach us that love was one of the most important commandments. And that we'll know, Jesus said, they'll know we are Christians by our love. So everything has to be done in love. But if we don't hold each other to account like this verse says, then we really are in danger of falling into what the world believes about truth and values. And that's pretty much all I have. So, we have a question or comment?
Yeah, if you did that same video, mm-hmm. you did it to kindergartners, and you also did the same video to people that were maybe 50, 60 years old.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. So she said, you know, if you did it for did the video for kindergartners, you get a very different reaction than if you did it for elderly people. And I think what you're saying is that we're seeing a shift in values in our society between older people and younger people. John. No, I didn't quite, but that's fine. Oh, Diane? Sorry. Yeah, so some things around the margins might change, but the heart and core of the truths that we believe don't change. So yeah, you're right. Maybe what we wear in church might change. That's a cultural thing. And the Bible doesn't really speak specifically, well, it does a little bit, but not too specifically on what we wear. And that might change as culture changes. But the truths we believe and hold on to, and especially the central truth of Jesus and Jesus being our truth, doesn't change. Yeah, in the back. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thought. He said Psalm 23 encourages us to stand for truth, and that if we do stand for truth, God is our advocate and He's our protector. And in Jesus' case, He stood for truth and they killed Him, but it all worked out for good. And it all worked out for our good in the end. And for Jesus' good as well. That's true. Sitting at the right hand of the Father. All right. So I think we're finished. So if we could have the worship team.